AP Radio News. I'm Tim McGuire. Islamic State militants have posted a graphic video on the internet. AP Shirley Smith has more.
The U.S. is trying to confirm the authenticity of a new video from the Islamic State group. It claims the beheading of 26-year-old American aid worker Peter Kasich. President Obama's National Security Council says if it does turn out to be real, the White House would be appalled by the brutal murder of an innocent American. Kasich was captured last year while helping provide medical aid to Syrians. His friends say he converted to Islam in captivity. Shirley Smith, Washington.
Kasich's family is asking for privacy as they await word from the government on whether the video is authentic. The Nigerian army says it has regained control of the town where more than 200 schoolgirls were kidnapped by Islamic extremists more than 6 months ago. The town itself was seized by the militants just last Thursday, but the army says it drove Boko Haram forces out yesterday. President Obama says his travels to China, Myanmar, and the G20 summit in Australia were productive in part because of the strength of the U.S. economy.
Growing economic strength at home set the stage for the progress that we have made on this trip. It's been a good week for American leadership and for American workers.
Obama is heading back to the U.S. where he faces some tough political fights, including his plan to use executive action to change immigration. He told reporters before getting onto Air Force One that congressional Republicans should come up with their own immigration reform bill.
There is a very simple solution to this perception that somehow I'm exercising too much executive authority. Pass a bill I can sign on this issue.
A suicide car bomber failed to kill a prominent female member of Afghanistan's parliament, only wounding the lawmaker, but he did kill three other people, including a young girl. This is AP Radio News. Four workers are dead. Another has been hospitalized by a chemical leak yesterday morning at a DuPont plant in a Houston suburb. LaPorte, Texas Emergency Management Director Jeff Suggs expects the federal investigation to be thorough.
Things like this take longer than a week, obviously. You know, when you have fatalities, I mean, they want to make sure that they get it right and make sure that they take all the proper steps to figure out what exactly did happen.
The chemical that leaked, methyl mercaptan, is used to make insecticides and fungicides. In college football, more bumps in the road to the playoffs. Mississippi State likely to fall from its number one ranking in the CFP and the Associated Press College Football Poll after losing to fourth-ranked Alabama 25-20. Second-ranked Florida State came from 16 points down to beat Miami 30-26. And fifth-ranked TCU rallied to beat Kansas 34-30. I'm Tim McGuire, AP Radio News.
In the small town of Elmira, New York, a boy was born into an all-American family. The odds of him achieving his dream in the fashion industry? 1 in 23 million. The odds of having a child diagnosed with autism? 1 in 68. I am Tommy Hilfiger, and my family is affected by autism. Learn more at autismspeaks.org/signs. Brought to you by Autism Speaks and the Ad Council.
GovEvents.com is your one-stop shop for government and military events worldwide. With hundreds of event organizers posting their government and military-related conferences, trade shows, expos, webcasts, and more, you'll save time and energy using GovEvents to find events to attend, exhibit, or sponsor. Search for government and military events by date, location, keyword, organizer, or focus. It's free, so join today. GovEvents.com. That's GovEvents.com.
Okay, so 5 tacos of cheese and a large soda, that's $10,012. Please drive around.
Wait, 10,000 what?
It's obvious you're buzzed and driving.
I've only had a few. I'm fine.
Yeah, the food's $12, but getting pulled over for buzz driving could cost you around $10,000 in fines, legal fees, and increased insurance rates. Please drive around. Actually, just park and come in.
Nothing kills a buzz like getting pulled over for buzz driving, because buzz driving is drunk driving. Brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration and the Ad Council.
This is Mark Amtower. If you're looking for cost-effective and efficient methods for marketing your products or services to the government or to other government contractors, look to LinkedIn. There are over 400,000 members in the D.C. area and more than 92 million nationwide, but only a small percentage actually use it well. I can show you how to leverage LinkedIn in ways that support your marketing, sales, and business development efforts. I do this for large and small companies, and I can do it for you. Drop me a line at mark@federaldirect.net.
This paid commercial may not represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those of individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
Welcome to Executive Leaders Radio. In this hour, you'll hear directly from our region's finest business leaders. Through each of the interviews, these high-achieving leaders become relatable role models who share how they were able to build their enterprise, their personal secrets of success, about leadership styles and opportunities that lie ahead. Prepare to be inspired and entertained and to hear wisdom unheard elsewhere. Executive Leaders Radio.
You're listening to Executive Leaders Radio, broadcast from the Tyson's Corner offices of Offutt Kerman. This is your host, Dana Theus with InPowerCoaching.com. I'm here with my co-hosts today, Mike Mercurio, principal of Offutt Kerman, and Joe Basile, managing partner of Spectrum Careers. We have a great lineup of guests for you today. We're starting off with John Yokley, CEO and president of PTFS. We have Kim Hayes, co-founder and CEO of Ambit Group, Bill Joseph, CEO, and Tom Burden, COO of Potomac Healthcare Solutions, and Chris Bergen, president and publisher of Tax Analysts. We start off with John Yokley, CEO and president, PTFS. John, what is PTFS?
PTFS is a products and services company. We build software and have COTS products as well. We started in 1995. Progressive Technology Federal Systems was the original name. We worked in the dot-com era in the late 90s. Some of our investors said you should get rid of that federal services name in your title, and so we just went by PTFS.
So you've been around for a while. You've seen the market go up and down, and you were one of the founders of this company. Did you have any idea what you were getting in for?
No, not at the time. The company's morphed significantly over years, but I have to say that we are still doing the primary mission that we started the company with, which is information systems. We realized that when we started the company that information was going to go exponential. That's the area that we targeted. We do content management services, and I actually thought that by the time I retired, the amount of paper, especially in the federal government, would be decreasing, but I don't think that's going to happen now.
So I'm curious, you know, being an entrepreneur and starting your own business is not necessarily an easy thing. Where did you learn that you could do difficult things?
I guess I learned that from my parents, mm-hmm. My father and my mother. My mother taught me integrity, honesty, and ethics. And my father, who is an engineer and a physicist by career, taught me that if you put your mind into it, you could build anything.
Where did you really learn to build? You told us a great story about the first thing you built.
So when I was 18 years old, a buddy of mine and I had a laborer job in Ocean City, Maryland. We were carrying boards and concrete 28 floors up into a high-rise building. And every day we would watch crews of construction teams building single-family houses across the street. The next year, when we were 19 years old, we built a house for ourselves. We realized that at that point in time, I realized that I could build things, and there was no better way to have gratification in life than to build something.
And you learned that at your dad's knee.
I did. My dad taught me, he was very hands-on when we were growing up. He taught me how to build things. He was an engineer himself. I'm an engineer as well. And all my hands-on experiences came from my dad.
So here you are running an IT company where you don't have to hammer many nails, but there must be a theme here. You're still building things.
There is a theme, and I still do hammer nails, actually. I believe that setting a good example for it takes – you must do anything to make it happen is a good example to set. The other day, not too long ago, it might seem absurd, but the example that we set was to move a door inside of our own building. Okay, so we're an IT company. Contractor couldn't do it in time, wanted $5,000. We did it the next day.
What do you think the most important part of your philosophy is that impacts your current business, personal philosophy?
So I believe that you have to get the employees motivated, and you can't teach motivation. It's something that you can encourage. The way that I've motivated employees is to give them a piece of the action. All our senior level management are stockholders in the company, and when you do that, they want to make it happen for themselves, whether it's a pot of gold at the end of the rainbow or a potential retirement plan someday. They always are motivated if they have stock.
I'm curious, why a technology business?
So I'm an engineer. I was a mechanical engineer. My first job was building flight simulators. And this was back in the day when you had motion bases in flight simulators. Things were moving around, but there was also computers involved. So I got involved in computers with flight simulators. Later on, found my way into the business development area, became more and more involved with computers, which were what was used to move motion bases and other things in the day. And then from there on, went into IT.
Brothers and sisters?
I have one brother. He is he's a doctor. He's a PhD. And so we're very different, but we've learned from each other.
Older or younger?
He's 5 years older.
What have you learned from your children? I understand you have four.
I do. I have four children. I've learned that if you set a good example, you never know what they're going to do in life, but they'll always do something good. My oldest one is, she's in the medical field. She's a speech pathologist. The second one is in the IT field. She's a graphics artist. The third one's an engineer as well. And the fourth one's in environmental science, and she plays field hockey for UC Berkeley as well.
They're all girls?
No, three girls and a boy.
Three girls and a boy. So what's harder, being a dad or running a company?
Being a dad.
Why is that harder?
Because you have to lead by example when you're being a dad, and so whenever you make a mistake, they see it.
Can't hide from your children.
You can't hide from your children.
You said earlier that you learned integrity from your mom.
I did.
How did that come about?
And unfortunately, I didn't. My mom died at a pretty early age. I was 19 years old, but that's what she instilled in me during my childhood. And she was religious, but not too religious. So she ingrained honesty and ethics via the church as well as by example.
So I'm curious. 19 was an important year for you. You built a house. You lost your mom.
Right.
What did you think you wanted to be when you were 19, and are you that?
You know, when I was 19, I didn't know what I wanted to be. But I did learn when I was 19 that I like to build things. And so I'm building different things than houses now, but we're still building things. When you do IT, you build software, you build solutions, and so forth.
So when you're not building things, what do you do for fun?
So I also I have a lot of things. I'm in a band. I'm a drummer in a band. I do triathlons, only one a year. I'd like to do more. I believe that you have to do a little bit of stuff for yourself sometimes to keep your sanity. So those are my two things right now. Earlier in life, I was into motorcycles and cars, and I haven't had a lot of time for that recently.
I'm curious about the band. I mean, being in a band is a really creative act. It's a great expressive act, and you're a drummer. What does being in the band do for you that nothing else in your life does?
I'd say relaxation. And you know, it's totally different from what I do every day. It's totally different from what I do with my family. It's totally different from what I do at work every day. And I'm hanging out with a bunch of guys that are similar. All professionals, all have jobs, all do it just for entertainment and fun. But we also want to be the best that we can be. So we do play gigs, and we go out and we have fun practicing in the basement.
Did you play an instrument as a child? Where did you come to music?
I did. My mother encouraged me at an early age to play an instrument. I started playing trombone. Then I switched to percussion in middle school. Went to Europe with a stage band in high school. And then I didn't touch a pair of drumsticks for almost 30 years.
Wow.
And my kids were playing in the basement when they were young. One of their friends saw drums in the furnace room, told their father who played guitar that, hey, Mr. Yokley has drums in the furnace room, and that's how the band started.
That's great. And you know, I'm really just impressed that you reconnected with your creative spark, because so many people, particularly leaders of companies, and you know, we've all got good excuses not to do things
right.
That give us joy, and you've gone out of your way not to do them but prioritize them. Is that hard? Does it make it harder to run the company?
No, it makes it better. It makes it easier. I think people, after they've done something for many, many years, you've heard of midlife crises. Everyone seems to have them. People, you know, get divorced. People buy a sports car. I started a band.
That was your midlife crisis.
<That's right. Yeah. laughs>
But how does it make you better at your job?
Oh, I think it's it offsets you from what you do every day. So when you go back to doing those things, you can concentrate much better.
Oh, really? So, yeah. Like, does it give your brain a vacation?
I think that it does. And plus, you're doing something creative. So, although it's not directly connected to my job, it does instill creativity. But it also, when you're in a band, you have to practice, and practice makes perfect.
Mm-hmm. Lots of different experiences, obviously, for you. Anyone in particular that influenced the direction of your business and ultimately where you want to see your organization go?
Wow, there's so many of them. I guess one of them was in the dot-com era. I mentioned that earlier. We got caught up in the frenzy of lots of funds flowing to take hard copy information and make it electronic and available over the internet. And I was involved in the very beginning stages of, you know, the browser internet connectivity and all of that. And I realized that information is going to be exponential. There's lots of opportunities in this field, and I've just picked a few of them, and so far it's working.
Given all the experiences that you've had, what is your number one personal success?
I guess getting back into athleticism at age 50 and doing a triathlon was probably one of the things that I had to work at and was not certain I could do it. And when I told some people that that's what I intended to do at 50, they thought I was a little bit crazy. But I've done 8 of them now, and it's really, really helped me to stay in good shape during the year, just knowing that I have to do that in September.
What's the website?
The website is ptfs.com.
This is Dana Theis with my co-hosts, Mike Mercurio and Offit Kerman, and Joe DeCiel, Spectrum Careers. Don't forget to visit our website, executiveleadersradio.com, to learn more about our executive leaders. We'll be back in just a moment, right after this business spotlight.
This is Les Smolin with Vistage International, and this is your business spotlight. Joining us today is Dr. Shirley Davis, President and CEO, The Success Doctor. Welcome, Shirley. Shirley, what's The Success Doctor all about?
It's a global workforce and talent management consulting organization. What we do is track trends, and we identify best practices and strategies for organizations around the world of all sizes, all industries, mm-hmm. and help them understand how to get great talent, how to keep it, and how to make sure that they get the most out of it.
And what's your role in the company?
My role is president and CEO, and I actually do a lot of the coaching and speaking and consulting.
And what do you like most about that?
Absolutely love the strategy development and helping to get leaders to that aha moment.
Mm-hmm. And what makes the organization so special, in your view?
Capturing a lot of the great best practices that we've been able to do. And I think, you know, my brand, I build great relationships and I provide them what they need instead of what I want them to have.
Mm-hmm. And what do you think the clients appreciate most about you and your company?
I make the strategies, even though they're global, I make them very, very customized and practical.
Uh-huh. And who, in your view, is the ideal client, the perfect client?
The perfect client is one that has a need, and the perfect client is one that can recognize that there is an opportunity with the strategies that we provide for them to make their organizations better.
Mm-hmm. And what do you personally enjoy most about the work?
I love seeing the strategies come to life. I love seeing the impact and the results that come as a result of it. Mm-hmm. And I love when they call me back and thank me because they've seen change.
That's excellent. And what's the website for the company?
DrShirleyDavis.com. That's www.drshirleydavis.com.
Thank you, Shirley. We've been speaking with Dr. Shirley Davis, President and CEO, The Success Doctor. This is Les Smolin, and that's been your Business Spotlight.
This is Peter Schwartz with Vistage International, and this is your Business Spotlight. Joining me for this segment is Doug Kay, who is a principal with a firm called Offit Kerman. What is Offit Kerman, Doug?
Offit Kerman is a full-service law firm in the Mid-Atlantic region with offices from Philadelphia all the way down to Tyson's Corner, Virginia, where I work.
Right. And you're a lawyer with the firm?
I'm a lawyer with the firm.
What practice area do you specialize in?
I mostly do work in commercial litigation, although I also do work in doing criminal defense and personal injury, anything that gets me to trial.
Anything that gets you to trial. Well, why do your customers appreciate you?
I think they appreciate me because I am a careful and sympathetic listener. And I try to offer concrete solutions to their most vexing legal problems.
Well, give us an example. Do you have, without mentioning specifics, a a recent example of where you were really good at this? How about your favorite client up till now, without getting into two particulars there?
Well, I represented a fellow who was in a commercial lease, and the landlord was determined to make him pay more than he should have been paying. And we had to go to court, and we had to go all the way through trial, and the client really appreciated the effort, and we got an excellent result for the client. And that was very satisfying, and since then he's been talking me up all over town, so I can't thank him enough.
Yeah. What's the best part of practicing law for you?
I would say that it is taking people through difficult circumstances when they think they don't have any options and trying to find a good solution for them.
Great. What's the website address for the law firm?
www.offutkerman.com.
Thank you. We've been speaking with Doug Kay, who's the principal with Offutt Kerman. This is Peter Schwartz, and that was your Business Spotlight.
We're back, and you're listening to Executive Leaders Radio. This is your host, Dana Theis, with my co-hosts, Mike Mercurio, Offutt Kerman, and Joe Basile, Spectrum Careers. Next up, we have Kim Hayes, co-founder and CEO of Ambit Group. Kim, what is Ambit Group?
Ambit's a management consulting firm that's focused on improving federal operations towards their mission and enabling the federal government to achieve its mission smarter, faster, and cheaper.
And you're a co-founder in this.
I am.
So you're just sitting around one day and said, I think I want to run my own business. I have nothing else better to do. Why start a business? This is not an easy thing to do.
Yeah. This isn't my first business. This is probably my third or fourth. Entrepreneurs, I think, are probably born. We walk out of the womb ready to rebuild the world. I was actually working with my business partner at another consulting firm. We had very similar approaches to business, very similar beliefs. At the time, Public Law 106-6 was passed, establishing the service-connected disabled veteran set-aside. And we looked at one another and said, let's go do it. We're doing it already.
Because one of you qualifies?
We are both service-disabled, service-connected disabled veterans.
So you were in the service?
Yes.
The Army.
I'm Army.
Okay.
Still are. You always are.
Yeah, always Army. And you're an entrepreneur. And
yes.
Did you walk out of the womb ready to start your own business? Were you working for a family of entrepreneurs?
My family's a farming family in the Carolinas. My grandfather, the whole family's Native American. He was one of the first Native American farmers to own his own land and run his own enterprise. I grew up helping them with their books, helping them manage the farm hands when they would come in and have needs, and helping to plan meals and take care of eventually 30-plus other grandchildren.
And you said you had a rather traumatic experience at a young age in that environment. What happened? And what did it do for you?
Farms have injuries. And my mom always worked in a factory there at home, and then she also would work on the farm. And there was one point in time when I saw the tip of her finger cut off in a tobacco loop, and realizing at the time that that meant she would be out of work from her other job. We didn't really have a safety net. We also didn't have medical insurance. Now, did I realize that at 8 or 9? No, I didn't. But I knew that we were in trouble. And what I always said was that I would find a way to be in a position that I wouldn't be in trouble.
Has that desire to achieve then been with you all along? Has it been part of your entrepreneurial drive?
I think it is. I also think that some people have a desire simply to be able to give back and be in control of their own destiny. I've always been that person. I knew very early on I would have children, and I actually remember growing up in the South and saying that I wasn't sure that I would have a husband, but I knew I would have kids. That didn't go over so well.
I was going to say, wow.
But, you know, I always knew that I wanted to be able to make choices.
Mm-hmm. Kim, what drove you to join military service, and what influence did that have on you currently in your entrepreneurism, if you will?
I had a full ride scholarship to college immediately after high school and couldn't afford to take it, because I had worked two jobs all the way through high school helping my mom make ends meet. So the challenge with that was that I needed to be able to have an income while I went to school. I grew up near Fort Bragg, and I was waiting tables, working double and triple shifts, whatever it took to bring money in. Got to know several of the military guys, and they said, you know, you should really consider this. Over time, I was exposed more and more, and one day on a lunch shift, I went to the recruiting station and walked into the door and left taking my ASVAB, and 2 weeks later, I was in basic training. Interestingly enough, there was $25,000 on the dotted line for education, and it was a mission I believed in.
Great.
What part of working with your hands on a farm translates to your current business?
Everything that we do is solutions-based. So when you're, and I don't know that anyone who knows me would say I worked with my hands, so forgive me for that. I was always one fixing problems. Consulting is really about not necessarily problems, but innovations. You walk into an organization, and I think that good consultants are wired to look for better. There's never a perfect, and there's never necessarily a solution that's not good. There are better solutions that accomplish the mission much more efficiently and effectively. So on a farm, you don't have the luxury of having a lot of extra cash. You're always looking for get it done, make sure you do it in a way that lasts, and do it at the most cost-effective way. It's the same thing that we do for the federal government.
I'm curious. I hear two really strong themes coming out. One is, you know, problem solver, get in there and figure it out. And the other is a sense of mission. And I'm wondering if you could have either one of those things but not both, which do you think would be most core to you?
I don't think they're separable. I understand the question, but I don't think they're separable.
How?
When you talk about mission, so my family farms, one of our first customers was USDA. Every day that we walked in USDA, we weren't simply delivering solutions that were per our contract. We were delivering solutions per our contract with a focus on what does the ultimate user need? What does this mission do? What are we accomplishing and for whom? So to me, that's how that plays in. When you are focused on mission, you are resolute. You are focused on an outcome and an objective, and each thing that you do delivers towards that. And that, I think, is how you get things done. I don't think they separate.
So, Kim, obviously you're mission-driven, results-oriented. Yeah. That's readily apparent. What do you do to relax? What do you do for fun?
I'm a huge golfer. Love to play.
And you were just saying how nice it was for golf today. Now we know why.
Oh, could we escape?
You wish you were out there.
I do wish I was out there. When I was injured on active duty, one of the things that I lost was the ability to run and do a lot of the heavier physical type efforts that I liked. A friend of mine introduced me to golf, and I was addicted almost immediately. I do still shoot. I shoot regularly. It's a relaxation place for me. For those of us who shoot, it's a place where you have to calm everything in your mind and your body to be able to do it well, and it's an immediate response. Mm-hmm. I'm going to take lots of walks with my dog. Love my dog.
Okay, great.
I'm curious. Being a woman in the military mm-hmm. is not the most common experience in the military. The numbers are still low. I think 14% was the last I saw. What would you say in your experience was the most important part of who you have become today? And also, what did you see about what women were bringing to the military?
Such a hard question for me, and I've had it asked many times, and I keep working on a better answer. I haven't gotten there yet. Being a woman wasn't something I realized even growing up. I'm the oldest of 30-plus grandkids, and there isn't another female until the last 5 or 7. There was no difference of standard of your female do this or your male do this. There was get this done. In the military, I took that same approach. I walked in and said, okay, here's your performance standard. Let me see what I can do. The difference, I think, is whether or not the people you're working with are wired in such a way that they allow you to take that approach. And follow me here. There are rooms that I walk in, and I'm the only woman there, and I'm the only woman that's going to be there. I'm not bothered by that. Neither am I asking for a different set of standards. Let me succeed. There are times, though, when you walk in and someone else sees that as a differentiator. And I think that's no different than color or race or religion or sexuality or any other differentiating characteristic. Please let me stand on my own 2 feet. That's all I ask.
And what advice would you give to people who have that similar situation where they're, you know, a minority, but they don't feel like the minority? What has succeeded for you in terms of mindset to help you succeed?
Well, obviously, I'm very timid. I tend to walk in and just say, I'm here and deal with it. Mm-hmm. Now, you can't do that forever. And earlier in my career, I couldn't. So I found advocates. I found friends. And I didn't ask for a favor. I said, look, I'm going to earn my right to be here. And I did.
Following up in that regard, was there an experience or a training that gave you the confidence that you clearly espouse?
Interesting. It's survival. You know, we were very poor, and I don't think I knew it. I didn't know it because my mom, who I adore with all my soul, never came home and said, oh, I'm going to work 2 jobs because we're poor. She said, I'm going to work 2 jobs. We have things to take care of, and you're going to do the following 27 things while I'm doing that, and you're going to keep your grades up, and don't you dare think that there's a safety net, because there's not. When you walk in every day and you just say, hey, I have to get this done, there aren't excuses. I'm probably, from a leadership perspective, I'm probably the least tolerant human in the world of excuses. Come in and say to me, okay, boss, I think we can do this 7 ways, and I'm going to help you figure out 6. Come in and tell me you can't do something, and you probably won't work for me for very long.
What would you say that people love about working with you most?
Oh, I'm not sure. I I have a lot of energy, and I think that people feel a passion, and they understand that I want to make a difference, and I'm not the one who will make that difference. My team will make that difference. So my job isn't to go in and control them, and it's not to tell them how to do their jobs. My job is to create an environment where really smart people can do really awesome things, and it's to run interference to keep hurdles from making them not be successful.
If your mom were with us today, and you had an opportunity to tell her something that you've never told her before, what would you say?
Well, she's my admin, so she kind of is with us today. And I tell her all the time, I'm really proud of who she is. She doesn't, my mom has a high school education, not from the greatest of areas and not from the greatest of times. And she'll often feel as if maybe she's not as sharp as someone else. I could not be prouder of her. She gave me so many characteristics that I couldn't replace any other way.
What's the website?
www.theambitgroup.com.
This is Dana Theis with my co-hosts, Mike Mercurio of Offit Kerman and Joe Basile of Spectrum Careers. Don't forget to visit our executiveleadersradio.com website to learn more about our executive leaders. We'll be back after this Business Spotlight. Joining us for this Business Spotlight is Wes Burnett, partner at Optifor. Wes, what is Optifor?
Optifor is a securities firm that integrates legal, tax, and financial and risk in order to offer optimal results for clients.
Who's your perfect client?
Perfect client is someone who actually would like to combine services, make their life simpler, and is very family-oriented. Our firm itself is very family-oriented. We love helping families take care of their own, and that can be multi-generational.
So what would a family need when they would come to you?
Typically, what they're doing is trying to simplify their personal life by trying to have somebody else worry about their legal and their tax and financial affairs and present them with solutions rather than questions.
Solutions rather than questions. So give us an example of a good solution.
A good solution is something that results, for example, in the lowest tax bill, the greatest savings, and taking care of the values important to the family, like saving for college for children or grandchildren or something along those lines.
So what do you enjoy most about your work?
My clients. Although a second place, a close, would be my staff, because I recruit very specifically people who have the same values as our clients. So we truly are very involved with our clients' lives, and they are family to us.
What about your family? Are they in the business too?
No. Although there's certainly plenty of lawyers and financial advisors and so on in the business. But no, they all have their own lives, and we're very pleased, quite frankly, with that. I actually have a wife who's a teacher for 42 years, so I take a lot of my values from her.
What is the website?
Optifor.com, OPTIFOUR.com.
Thanks for listening to this Business Spotlight. We're back, and you're listening to Executive Leaders Radio. This is your host, Dana Theis, with my co-hosts, Mike Mercurio at Offit Kerman and Joe Basile at Spectrum Careers. Our next guests are two partners, Bill Joseph, CEO, and Tom Burden, COO, Potomac Healthcare Solutions. Bill and Tom, what is Potomac Healthcare Solutions?
Bill, Potomac Healthcare Solutions is an organization that Tom and I started that actually is as stated, a solutions-oriented healthcare company that provides hands-on patient care throughout the spectrum of services in any healthcare organization.
And you all started this together as partners, and you've expressed yourself very much as partners. Really no one's in charge?
It often seems that way. We do have a method to our madness, but nominally Bill is the CEO and I'm the COO. I think those roles were chosen because our natural bent is Bill's more of an external outside guy and I'm more the nuts and bolts operator.
And a lot of partnerships fail. But you have described a very healthy one. What is your secret to success? What's the agreement between you?
Well, first of all, you have to understand that it stems from the fact that we're both Navy. That in itself breeds trust. We've worked together. We've worked with a team. We've been part of that healthcare team for years. And when we started this company, we made an agreement that we're in this together. We're in it because we both want to do something good for patients. Obviously, we want to make money. But the patient is number one, and we've always agreed that if it's not good for the patient, it's not good for us, and we just base everything and do all of our work on that fact. When we have something that's open for discussion, we listen to each other and move forward.
I'm really interested to hear you talk about trust and how important that is, because it's sometimes a value we forget in business. But it sounds to me like it's very important to both of you. When did trust become something in your life that mattered?
Well, realizing that both Bill and I started off with very common entry into the healthcare world. We were both enlisted Navy hospital corpsmen. The Navy hospital corps, by the way, is the only enlisted corps in the military, and that's a very special group. From there, we were both commissioned as medical service corps officers, and we share a common set of values we've lived with for 20 plus years. We brought those values with us into our commercial endeavors, and we've been working actually at two separate companies working together for an additional 20 years. So Bill and I, we complete each other's sentences. We long ago formed the rule that if one of us is uncomfortable with an opportunity or a discussion point, there's something on the table that one of us doesn't feel good about, we just don't do it, and there's no hard feelings.
And you both were in the Navy at a very interesting time, and I think, Bill, you mentioned that it was a turning point for you.
Actually, it was. I was fortunate enough to be able to serve on the USS Sanctuary during the Vietnam era, and while we were located off the coast of Vietnam, there were many, many serious injuries that we were able to take care of. A lot of people who may not have lived had that hospital ship not been there. It kind of instilled in me even more of a desire to want to take care of people, because I saw what not taking care of each other would lead to. And I didn't want to get anybody in that position again. And I think the best way to make sure that we don't get in that position is if we all care about each other.
It's a real juxtaposition you saw.
It was, definitely.
Mm-hmm.
Bill and Tom, you share a lot of similarities, obviously. Both two daughters, from what I understand, two grandchildren, three grandchildren. What influences have your children had on you in terms of your approach and philosophy to business?
That's an interesting question. With two daughters and being in the Navy when they were growing up, I think the influence that I had was trying to make and provide stability for them, knowing that we were going to be moving from one place to another and assigned to different things, different jobs, that we're going to take more of our family time, is providing that stability and watching them grow and then learning from them how to interact, how they interacted with all the different changes that were certainly harder for them as teenagers and as adolescents than it were for us as adults. And learning from how they did that certainly was a help to me.
In my case, like Bill, we moved around quite a bit. Our kids today, I think, are much more resilient in that they've never met a stranger. They're comfortable in just about any setting. But there's more to it. You know, our family unit was, in fact, although we were away from grandparents and extended family, we had another family unit, and that was the Navy family. And we never said goodbye. You know, you might change duty stations, and two tours down the road, you'll run into somebody. We ended up living next door in San Diego to a girl that my daughter attended kindergarten with. So it really was a small world.
I'm wondering, going back to your original families, both of you, what were the common themes? You have so much in common. You have the Navy. You have your business. What were the common themes in your original family? Did you grow up together?
No, we didn't. I'm a blue-collar kid from Western Massachusetts. Bill's from Chicago.
Yeah, blue-collar from Chicago.
But my dad served in World War II in the Army, and it came from a close-knit family. But at the same time, until I entered the Navy. I was the first kid in my family to go to college, and you know, I think that values, you know, I brought the values from my mom and my dad, of course, in Catholic school and all that stuff. But at the same time, I don't think I really quite woke up to everything until after I had enlisted in the Navy.
Yeah. In my case, my parents were divorced. So I grew up living with my mother and my grandparents. But during their divorce process, I got the choice of staying at home, or if I went to military academy, I could have my own horse. So what would you think someone in sixth grade would do? I obviously went to military academy for sixth, seventh, and eighth grade, had my own horse, loved every minute of it. And maybe that's what set the tone for me to want to be in the military to begin with, because I enjoyed it. I enjoyed the regimentation. I enjoyed the teamwork of doing things with the other cadets, as we call them at that point in time, and it was fun. It wasn't work.
The military, the Navy is obviously a significant theme for both of you. Any other specific significant influences outside of that that drove you to be where you are from a business standpoint?
Well, we had, after leaving the Navy and leaving Navy medicine, interestingly enough, Bill and I never knew each other on active duty. I was still serving in Washington. Bill had retired by then, and I ran into him in a business setting. I then left and went to work for a public company and enticed Bill to come over and join us, and he took on a role of managing our long-term care business. We worked together there for about 8 years and then moved on to a new company where Bill went first, and then he brought me into the new company. So we've kind of followed each other around, but we've been sort of joined at the hip now for over 25 years.
There's so much strength in similarities, but there's also a lot of strength in differences. What is one key difference in approach that either of you might have?
That's an interesting question. I don't know that there is a significant difference in approach. Well, there may be an approach, but not in the end.
Or viewpoint.
I can't think of one.
Well, I can tell you, Bill tends to be a little more excitable than I am, and we always get to the same end point, which is very interesting and hardly surprising anymore. But, you know, Bill can get spun up, and I'm the one who's kind of pulling him back sometimes. And other times that's great. You know, he'll be out there talking to a client. We can do that. We can do that. And then he turns around. How are we going to do that?
Yeah, but we always do.
And somehow we figure it out.
So I'm really curious. Partnerships, good partnerships that last, like yours have, are a little bit like being married, right?
Sure.
So is it harder to be married to each other or to your spouses?
Good question.
No one will hear the answer, really. It's okay.
We have a good time with what we're doing. We get teased a lot. You see the way we're dressed today. We didn't coordinate this. This happens more than you would know. And honestly, you know how husbands and wives finish their own sentences? We finish each other's sentences. And so there are times where it's more like it's a different relationship than a business relationship. I will tell you this. There's one person other than my family who I would trust with my life, and that's Tom.
And same with me. I mean, I will say that I've had fewer disagreements with Bill.
That's a good one. I like that. That's a good standard of success.
Yeah, he's Mr. Tact.
Mr. Tact. So I'm curious, too, what does success mean to both of you at this point in your careers? And I'm talking here about not just business success, but...
Well, as you might, this will probably come to a shock as a shock to you, but you know, we're not young kids. We've been doing this for a while, and we're not going to do it forever. At some point, Bill would love to go play golf, and I want to go do some more photography and travel. But right now, we're having fun, and we're doing good things, and at the same time, doing well as a company. And those are all very important to us. And I think those three things together, along with maintaining a balance with our family lives really defines success for me.
And I'll add one thing to success. It's a story, and I'm surprised Tom didn't think about this. The other day we got notified that one of the people that we care for in the Special Operations Command had a life-ending injury, and he wasn't going to be able to sustain life. And he was located in Thailand. We were able to send one of our social workers over there to be there when his family came over. So they kept this guy alive on a ventilator so his family could come over and say goodbye. And we were able to send one of our social workers over to be with the family and provide them support. That's success.
What's the website?
PotomacHealthcare.com.
This is Dana Theus with my co-hosts, Mike Mercurio, Offit Kerman, and Joe Basile, Spectrum Careers. Don't forget to visit our website, executiveleadersradio.com, to learn more about our executive leaders. We'll be back after this business spotlight. Here for today's business spotlight is Chris Vannetti, Vice President of Contract and Project Staffing Services at Hire Strategy. Chris, what is Hire Strategy?
Hire Strategy is a D.C. Metro-based professional services and staffing firm specializing in information technology placements as well as HR and administrative, sales and marketing, and accounting and finance.
And what do clients love about working with Hire Strategy?
We take an old-school approach to staffing, and what I mean by that is, you know, back in the day before social media and email, it was all about people. And we're one of the few and last firms in this marketplace, probably nationwide, that really interviews in person, takes the time to know their candidates, and 100% takes the time to know their clients, their pushes and pulls, the positives and negatives, to make the right match. So it's truly a consultative approach.
Mm-hmm. What do employees love about working for Hire Strategy?
It's definitely our culture. And the employees that work for us, I think they would all to a person say, we believe in leadership, not management. And that's one of our key mottos. And leading people is a definite thing that we like to do, and we like to do it often.
So what does that mean for a new employee? They get to be a leader?
They can get to be a leader, but they're a leader of their own practice, of their own business. We allow them to be entrepreneurial. We allow them to make their own decisions, and we're there to help them along the way, correct them if need be. But motivation and leadership is the one way that we think that people are going to excel with us.
What do you love most about your job?
I love that I get the opportunity to be a leader and to be entrepreneurial and work with a great bunch of people and a great group of executives along with myself. So it's a great place to be.
What's the website?
The website is www.hirestrategy.com.
Thank you for listening to this Business Spotlight.
Joining us for this Business Spotlight is Dana Theus, president of InPowerCoaching.com. Dana, what is InPowerCoaching.com?
InPowerCoaching.com is a really unique online and in-person coaching experience for mid-level employees who want to get on and stay on the leadership track.
And what do your clients appreciate most about InPowerCoaching.com?
Well, what clients really get out of InPowerCoaching is an opportunity to achieve professional success by developing themselves personally. So the way that they develop their own personal skills dealing with other people benefits them at work and in their family and their homes, and they become more of who they naturally are, all while achieving more professional success.
So who is your perfect client, and what do they need?
So a perfect client for InPowerCoaching.com is someone who really doesn't have time for professional development, but is dedicated to developing themselves personally anyway, and they look for online and in-person opportunities whenever they have time and ever have the ability to work on themselves. And they put their own program together and achieve success on their own terms.
And what is your website address?
www.inpowercoaching.com. That's InPowerCoaching.com.
Thank you for listening to this Business Spotlight.
We're back, and you're listening to Executive Leaders Radio. This is your host, Dana Theus, with my co-hosts, Mike Mercurio of Offit Kerman and Joe Basile of Spectrum Careers. Next up, we have Chris Bergen, president and publisher of Tax Analysts. Chris, what is Tax Analysts, and why does it need a publisher?
Well, first of all, thank you for having me here. Tax Analysts is a nonprofit organization that works for the betterment of fiscal systems, and that means tax systems around the world, federal, state, and international. In order to support our nonprofit mission, we sell tax information. So we are both a nonprofit and we are a publisher, hence the title.
And you're not the founder, but you came to this early on. What were you doing when you got
aligned with tax analysts?
Writing about tax law. My background is I'm a tax lawyer who wrote about tax law, came to the organization in 1991, did not plan to stay very long, met the founder, and I am the second one to hold the role of president and publisher. So there's only been two of us.
What is it that made you stay? What aligned you so closely to the organization?
His dedication to fairness and taxation, his dedication to transparency. I, as they say, drank the Kool-Aid. He believed that this little organization, which was very small at the time, could actually change the world. A small part of the world, granted, but an important part of the world, which was tax.
And why is fairness so important? How young were you when unfairness became a problem for you?
Well, I think one of the biggest influences on my life was when I was a very young child. I lost my mother. To brain cancer. I was 9 years old, and I was the oldest of what is now six children. The unfairness of that, and I'm a lot older than nine now, as you can tell, still never been explained to me, I think really started me on the road of thinking a lot about things should be as fair as possible. We can't control everything. But to a large extent, we can control our government, and we should be able to control our tax system. It's our tax system, not theirs.
So you were nine, and so the youngest was how old?
Two.
Two. Did you take on a lot of responsibility in the family after that?
I became the surrogate father. My father had a job in which he traveled a lot, was out of the house most weekdays on the road, so I became the surrogate father when he wasn't there. And as the family grew, even though he remarried, it's remained that way.
And you mentioned that you kind of made your family into a team. You were, the family became a team. How did that look when you were young?
It looks pretty much the same the way tax analyst looks now. I'm the coach who doesn't have all the answers, and I believe in team ball, that everybody contributes to the success of an organization. And the more you listen, the better leader you are. You know, there's an old proverb, and I don't know where it comes from, but it goes something like, God gave you two ears and one mouth for a reason. That lesson is learned very well in team ball, much better, I think, than an individual ball.
So you mentioned before you're a basketball guy.
Broken down basketball player.
Broken down basketball guy. How much did basketball and sports influence you just in terms of your competitiveness with your current mission?
Tremendously. With basketball, which is my favorite sport, although I've played others, and that's a great question. I've played it badly. I've coached it better. I've reffed it horribly. But I've been involved in youth sports until I got this job when I didn't have any time. It is an influence on me that people working as a unit are much more than people working independently. And the way I grew up in the kinds of leagues that I played in, it was an enormous lesson early on in a word that's become popular but was not popular when I was younger. The word is diversity. And I've coached all different kinds of kids. As a matter of fact, the only two championships I've won as a coach were with girls. They make better basketball players than boys.
I understand fairness being important to you. What is your definition of fairness?
When it comes to tax equal treatment under the law, when it comes to human beings, that we all treat each other with respect and understand that we're different, but we're all here for a purpose, and not one of us is better than the other. I think fairness is treating other people the way you want to be treated yourself.
You know, there are a lot of people that would say trying to fix the tax system and take on the IRS would just be tilting at a windmill. You know, why bother? There's something in you, though, that I see. You think you can make a difference. Where did you first tap into that belief that you could make a difference?
I don't know. I've had it for a long time. I think in the fact that when I was very young and my brothers were not really sure where the next step was going and I started to take the lead, they began to change. and I realized the powerful impact that leadership could have. And that's kind of what I've been doing ever since. I have a strange makeup. I like the lead. I just don't like being the leader.
What does that mean? Explain that.
I'm not in this for the center of attention. I'm in this to make a difference. I have difficulty being the center of attention. I have difficulty making speeches. I do not have a difficulty taking on a cause, as you say, tilting at a windmill. Somebody gave me a gift a long time ago of two mugs. I think they're Dalton mugs. One is an English barrister, and the other is Don Quixote. They are appropriate.
Chris, I mean, your business and the mission, I got to be honest, reminds me of a John Grisham novel. What's the ending? And ultimately, how do you get there?
The founder had an interesting answer to this question, and the ending, I guess, is to put the organization out of business, that the tax system is so fair that we don't need tax analysts any longer. I personally don't believe that ending is possible. But getting to a tax system that treats people fairly and that is administered as transparently as possible, and we do not have one, either at the federal or state level, would be getting there. It's a long, long mission, but that's okay. We have a great staff and a lot of time. We've been around for 40 years, and what we're trying to build right now, and again, this is teamwork because the coaches change, hopefully we'll be around at least another 40 years.
Excellent.
What advice would you give to people who are taking on a large challenge, you know, going up up against an institution? You know, what advice would you give them?
Hire people smarter than you are. I feel sorry for people who want to be the smartest person in the room. It's pity would be the word I would use. Hire smart people and listen to them. They'll help you lead. And then they'll take over after you're gone.
What's an example of a mistake that you've made and recovered from that taught you the value of failure?
We lived in various buildings when I took over the organization. We had very, very little money at the time, and the dream of the founder had always been to put the staff into one building. Which we accomplished. We have one headquarters. It's a nice headquarters. It's comfortable for the staff. The biggest mistake I made was I began to think that was my personal accomplishment. The only time I get in trouble is if I start a day off thinking it's about me. Don't do that. It's not a good idea. That would be my mantra. It's not about me. It's about what I do and the other people I do it with and the cause. I think we all get in trouble when we get a little selfish.
What's the website?
Tax.org is the easiest way to get to all of our different areas. We have a lot of missions and a lot of publications, but tax.org is easy to remember.
This is your host, Dana Theus. I'd like to thank my co-hosts, Mike Mercurio, principal at Offutt Kerman, and Joe Basile, managing partner at Spectrum Careers. I'd also like to thank Offutt Kerman for the use of their beautiful offices, and I'd like to thank our guests today, John Yokley, CEO and President, PTFS, Kim Hayes, co-founder and CEO, Ambit Group, Bill Joseph, CEO, Tom Burden, COO of Potomac Healthcare Solutions, and Chris Bergen, President and Publisher of Tax Analysts. I'd like to thank you, our listening audience, because without you, we wouldn't have a radio show. Don't forget to visit our website, executiveleadersradio.com, to learn more about our executive leaders. Have a good day. Bye-bye.
Thank you for tuning in. You've been listening to Executive Leaders Radio, the region's premier radio show highlighting local executive leaders. We hope you've enjoyed the show here on 1500 AM. You can learn more about Executive Leaders Radio by visiting executiveleadersradio.com or tune in next time right here on 1500 AM. That's executiveleadersradio.com.
WFED Washington, WWFD Frederick, WWWT-FM HD2 Manassas. This is Federal News Radio, on the air at 1500 AM and online at federalnewsradio.com. The only radio station in the world dedicated to serving the federal executive and government contractor. It's our mission to provide news and information that helps federal managers do their job better and help facilitate the business of government. Federal News Radio talks to the people who make government work to build a sense of
of Federal Community, discuss best practices, and explore lessons learned. Every weekday from 6 a.m. to 7 p.m., Federal News Radio interviews federal newsmakers one-on-one to explain how their news affects agencies and contractors. The Washington, D.C. home of Navy athletics. Nights and weekends, WFED broadcasts all the action of the Navy midshipmen, George Washington Colonials, American University Eagles, Washington Nationals, and the Washington Capitals. Federal News Radio, 1500 a.m. and Federal News Radio.
This paid commercial may